most of you know Ron from participation in the Ethical Humanism Study Group this past spring. And we'd like to welcome him again to talk about the membership of the American Ethical Union in the Secular Coalition for America. I thought I would just read the 10 members. As you know, the Humanist Union of Madison is an American Humanist Association affiliate, and they're one of the members. The 10 coalition members are American Atheists, American Ethical Union, American Humanist Association, Atheist Alliance International, Camp Quest, Freedom from Religion Foundation, Institute for Humanist Studies, Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, Secular Student Alliance, and Society for Humanistic Judaism. And I'll be very interested in hearing what Ron has to say about the decision process as the American Ethical Union decided to join. I guess you would say they're the only religious organization that's...
I think the Society for Humanistic Judaism would have a heart attack if they heard you say that.
Okay.
Collectively.
They're also a religious association.
In fact, I'll just relate a very funny anecdote from the first Secular Coalition board meeting I went to. I am their treasurer. And one of the representatives from the American Ethical Union, during the course of the meeting, felt that on a few occasions some people had expressed opinions that could be viewed as religion bashing in a kind of general way. And so he said near the end of the meeting, when we were having like a wrap-up or something, that he was a little offended that some people would use that kind of language and say things like that, and that he would find it acceptable if they would just caveat what they were saying by saying traditional religions. At which point the woman from the Society for Humanistic Judaism said, "Excuse me, but we consider ourselves a traditional religion. And so I don't think that language would work for us." So it just goes to show you that, you can always start talking about things in ways that if you're not careful, you will realize that you're excluding somebody that you really don't want to exclude because they really are part of the same spectrum of non-believers or non-theists or whatever we all want to call ourselves, to use some... The only reason those terms seem to be pretty good, non-believers or non-theists, is because there's no organization that has really taken on one of those names as a banner. And so that, like if you say you're a Unitarian, but somebody, a humanist, and somebody else says, well, I don't want to be a Unitarian. Or I don't want to be a humanist, I want to be an atheist, because there's atheist organizations. Or I want to be, whatever, a secular humanist, or a religious humanist, and so on and so forth. But there is no organization that I know of that is the organization of non-believers or non-theists. And so maybe those terms work a little better for that reason.
The Secular Coalition comes as close as any of them.
Well, the Secular Coalition for America was founded specifically to increase the visibility and respect of non-theistic viewpoints in the United States and to protect and strengthen the secular character of our government. And in order to do that, they knew that they were going to be an advocacy organization, a lobbying organization. And so, unlike most of our groups that are incorporated as nonprofit, whether they're incorporated as religious organizations like the American Ethical Union or the Society for Humanistic Judaism or the Unitarians, for that matter, or whether they're incorporated as a educational group like, say, the American Humanist Association, their purposes are educating people about humanism as a life stance or way of life. What 501c3 organizations, those kinds of nonprofits, can do in terms of lobbying is very limited and very restricted to a small percentage of their budget and resources and activities. And if they go beyond that, they run the risk of losing their tax-exempt status. So the Secular Coalition was specifically founded to not be one of those kinds of organizations, but to in fact be a lobbying organization and to hire, originally it was just kind of a pipe dream, but they managed to find enough people that found the idea appealing to get funding to hire first a part-time lobbyist and a full-time lobbyist, expand their staff. Now they have two or three lobbyists and other staff on board. They have grown incredibly. So clearly they have touched a nerve. And I think when I consider the process that the American Ethical Union went through in joining the Secular Coalition, and how we analyzed what it would mean for us and whether it seemed good or not, I think that's where it touched a nerve with us. And I think that perhaps is true with the other groups as well. I think we probably all can recognize, even if we haven't really thought about it, that there's like a spectrum of people's concerns and involvement with social justice, or what we call ethical action in the American Ethical Union, or social action. And there are people that are really active. There are people that do it as their job. And so, you know, they don't necessarily have a lot of free volunteer time to do things like that as well, because they're doing it 2,000 hours a year as a paid position. There are other people that are very active. My wife was, I told her she had to get a paying job so she could cut back from 80 hours a week to 40 hours a week when she was a full-time volunteer in Baltimore in the peace and justice community, working with a lot of different groups. And there are other people that are the support people for that, you know, that help keep the organizations going to do this kind of work. There are the people that provide resources for it, financial or otherwise. So there's a whole spectrum where people can fit in along this line. And I think in all of our groups, like the American Ethical Union and our local ethical societies, we have people like that. And a lot of times, there are at least some folks who feel like we're not doing enough in the interaction with our government to keep church-state separate and so on. And all those kinds of issues that Julie is just talking about. I mean, there are so many of them, you can't even believe it. How many of them there are.
At all levels of government.
Yeah. At all levels of government, national, state, local.
It goes all the way down.
It does. It certainly does.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's just mind-boggling how much there is. And I think that that was what I stressed as I brought this idea forward within the American Ethical Union of us joining the Secular Coalition, that we really have a significant number of people that would like us to have a much bigger voice in that kind of arena than we have, or that we can even realistically do on our own. And so here was the opportunity by joining this group, which is doing that, and by what we're paying to be a member of that group keeps us well within the limits of what's permissible for a nonprofit organization to do, we could become that thing. Now, one other thing I do have to mention, at least briefly, is that you're probably aware that in some context there has been some tension between the people who identify themselves as secular humanists and the people who identify themselves, or are identified by other people sometimes, as religious humanists. And that sometimes they denigrate each other. And I think we all have members like that in our groups. And we certainly have some in the American Ethical Union who have met secular humanists that they do not get along with for a variety of reasons. And so when I knew that as soon as we brought this up, because this organization is called the Secular Coalition for America, that people were going to immediately think, secular humanism, I don't like it, I don't want to join. And so when I I didn't bring the idea originally to our board, but then I managed the process of how we were going to have a discussion and vote to join. And what I insisted on was a process where we carried on a dialogue, not just at the board, but throughout the movement and at our National Assembly, so that everybody who wanted to get their say in could be heard and understand. And I tried to get people to focus on what is the idea of this group. Forget what its name is. Forget the fact that it's got the Atheist Alliance International as one of its members. Just focus on what is this group able to do by having all these other organizations part of it that would be a benefit for us. And I think I was successful. When we had the meeting and the vote at our assembly in Austin, Texas 2 years ago, during the way we do our business meetings at the assembly is that when we have significant issues, we present them in the first business session, and the second business session is 2 days later. And so everybody has a chance to digest the information, to talk about it in the halls, to talk about it over coffee or a beer or whatever. And then in the second session, we actually have the vote on it. So in the first session, when we had the discussion and people presented viewpoints on it, there were quite a few that came in with a bias against it, because of the name. But by the time we had the vote, it was pure total consensus. Everybody voted for it.
I think they were very uncomfortable with the idea that there might be people there who ridiculed religion. It's just not the way of the ethical society, which is not true of many humanists or many humanist groups. You'll often see, even right, not just on the floor, but actually coming down from the leaders, ridicule of religious people or of people who believe in God or whatever, it's very uncomfortable to ethical society people. I think that was one of their biggest, wouldn't you say that was one of their biggest fears?
Right, but that gets me to what, along the lines of what do we actually get out of it? Of course, part of it is that we get this ability to be involved directly in social action at a level and a depth as it involves the government that we couldn't do on our own because we would exceed the issues. And yet, being involved in ethical action is integral to our being as ethical culture. It was part of our founding. As I've mentioned, and as it says on the wristband I wear, deed before creed. We think that what your creed is not nearly as important as what your deeds are and how you act. And if you really believe in trying to make the world a better place, you've got to act that way. You can't just talk about it. You've got to actually be doing it somehow. And so that's really fundamental to ethical culture. But one of the other huge things that we do get out of being in the secular coalition, I think, is the opportunity to interact with people from other organizations. And it goes both ways. I think people that don't think much of religious humanists and think we're all a bunch of misguided deists in disguise or something, I don't know what they think, sometimes they learn that, maybe we're okay after all, and maybe we actually have something. And likewise, we've got people who think that most secular humanists wear horns, and or we may not think they're quite as evil as, say, Jerry Falwell thought they were, but on the other hand, we have our problems with them. So I think I think in a larger context, that's something that is part of the reason I've dedicated a lot of my free volunteer time in my life to supporting these organizations, is that I think that all of us, the spectrum of groups that are in the secular coalition, I think we share 99.9% of our values in common. but we spend all of our time focusing on the 0.1% that we don't share in common and arguing about it and trying to convince the other that they're wrong and we're right, when, you know, we could just be doing so much more if we would just let that go.
So. I think there's another point too about being having a presence at the secular coalition is to sensitize them that how uncomfortable we are with any ridicule or, you know, this is, I don't even know why would they bother? I just don't, you know, it's like way beyond me why they would do it. But it is important that we have a presence there that if it, you know, someone does do it, you know, we can say, you know, I'm really uncomfortable with what you're doing or whatever, however you want to say it. Excuse me for interrupting.
Right. One other thing that we did as part of joining is that, like probably many of you, many of our members feel like they're already way over the top on how many emails they get a day. And so we didn't want to like just say everybody's going to get on the Secular Coalition's listserv and start getting all their emails, because a lot of people don't want to do that. And so it actually gets right to this point that came up before that Julie suggested that, or somebody suggested that Julie could send the alerts to Bob and he could distribute the appropriate ones to this group. We formally said that we would try to find a liaison within each local group, each local ethical society, and then we have one guy that's like the national intermediary or contact point or liaison, whatever you want to call him. So he gets all the Secular Coalition notices and he decides what to disseminate to the contacts at each society, and then they disseminate them to their email lists of their members, so that way there's like this filtering down process, so that if 20 emails come out from the Secular Coalition, maybe he passes on 10 of them, and then at one society they might pass on 3 of them, and another one they have an interest in 3 other ones because of stuff that their members are interested in. So that's another thing that we're doing to, you know, help manage it. But every individual, the Secular Coalition has no individual members. And in fact, that is another benefit of being a member, is that people find the Secular Coalition on their own. They're very impressed with it. They ask if they can join, and there is no way to join. Mm-hmm. But the Secular Coalition officially tells them, you know, here's our 10 groups. These are all nonprofit groups. They all have, they're in a spectrum of non-believers. Go check them out. Find one in your community, you know, or 2 or 3 or 10. You know, join as many as you want. So the Secular Coalition accepts contributions from everybody, of course, which are non-tax deductible because it's a lobbying organization. But they encourage people to join the other member groups, and they publicize those groups. And some of those groups, we often think that ethical culture is pretty small and not really on the map, but some of those other groups are quite small and unknown too and not on the map. The one that I found fascinating from the first meeting I went to is the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers. I want to make sure I get that name right, which is quite an interesting group that I'll tell you about if you want to hear about it later.
You can tell them about their sweatshirt.
Well, that isn't their sweatshirt, but
oh, it isn't?
That's a different one. My Atheist and Foxhole sweatshirt that some of you may have seen me wearing. When it gets a little cooler, I'll be wearing it again.
was the rest of it always, well, was, always will be, or something?
I'm sure you've all heard the denigration of atheists, that there are no atheists in foxholes. Mm-hmm. And so they put out a sweatshirt called that says, "Atheists in foxholes, always have been, always will be."
Seems to me I've heard a number of individual stories about people who started out as believers And while they're in the foxholes, they become atheists.
It goes the other way around, yeah.
I think very often.
So,
just assume I'm buying out.
So, I don't know. I don't really have much more organized to say. If people want to pick up on anything I mentioned and ask questions or comments or
however you want to do this. What is the process for input from the member organizations to the national?
The Secular Coalition has a board, and each organization that's a member has one vote on that board. So it's a purely democratic thing. It doesn't matter how big or how small you are, how much money you contribute or not. It's one organization, one vote. They invite each organization to send two representatives to the board meetings so that they have a little broader range of discussion about things. So those people are treated as board members for the purpose of participating in all the deliberations and discussions. But when it comes to actual voting, it's one vote per organization. And then they have five officers, and the officers are not on the board, which is an unusual model in my experience. I haven't encountered that elsewhere. So they had actually recruited me to be the treasurer, and the first board meeting I went to as the treasurer, when they had the first vote came up, I voted, and the president turned to me and said, "You can't vote, you're not on the board." I said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Well, in that case, I resign." No, no, I didn't. So I was surprised. Now, the president presides over the board, and he can vote in the case of a tie, to break a tie, or I guess he could vote to create a tie. To keep something from passing if he opposed it. But,
so the American Ethical Union has someone else as their representative.
So we have two people who attend pretty regularly the board meetings. They meet twice a year, their board. And they just had their first teleconference board meeting as a trial, and they might start meeting four times a year, two times by teleconference, or perhaps even three times by teleconference.
What if you say, it's Congressman X is doing this, and you want to bring it to their attention?
Congressman X?
Yeah.
Well, they lobby people in Congress on a daily basis. They're in Congress. So if there's something that should be brought to somebody's attention, send it through the channels to their office, and if it's something they're aware of, they're probably already doing it. They're probably way ahead of you. But just in case they aren't ahead of you, they would be happy to know and do something.
Who the representative for the American Humanist Association is?
It
was Mel.
Just changed. Why did it change? Who is it now? Is it David Nias? Or he was it. And is he the president now of the American Humanist Association? Or he was the president?
I'm not sure.
I wish I could answer that question. I know he was involved in the changeover, and I can't remember whether it's because he took on some different role and would have a conflict of being on the Secular Coalition board at the same time, or whether it was somebody else and he came on to replace the somebody else.
So I can find that out and let members of our group know.
So Ron, does the board work on policies, decisions in terms of like what the lobbyists are going to emphasize at that point, or what kinds of decisions is the board making?
They really don't do a whole lot of that. I mean, they do some of it because the staff people are they're incredible. I mean, they have been able to hire the most unbelievable staff. I mean, it's just really incredible and impressive to me, the people that they have. When I came on as treasurer, I wanted to find out, you know, what's the bookkeeping system like, you know, what's the support in the office for doing the paying of bills and stuff, you know, what's my level of involvement here, you know, because, you know, in some groups, you know, being a treasurer is you're a lot of hands-on work, and I didn't really have time to do a lot of hands-on work with this group. Well, I found out the guy that's basically running the office there and taking care of everything is really very competent. He's got like a master's degree in economics from Stanford or somewhere. talking to the predecessor treasurer and to him, I was like, okay, I mean, all I have to do is, you know, help him with some decision making and basically let him do things, and then I just kind of look things over and make sure they're happening properly and, you know, like a due diligence kind of thing more than anything else. So the board talks about quite a few things that are different ideas for, you know, increasing the visibility of non-theistic viewpoints, I think is primarily what they focus on. And they came up with this idea of like identifying the highest ranking elected official in this country who would come out of the closet as a non-believer. And they actually went and talked to people that they had suspicions about, but they had a very, very, very small group of people do this. There were, I think, like 3 people. Mm-hmm. And they found 22 members of the United States Congress who admitted to these 3 people, that they were non-believers, but only one who was willing to have it be known publicly. Mm-hmm. And so, but they had this contest, and then they announced him, and so that's Congressman Pete Stark, whom I'm sure you probably have all heard. This happened about a year and a half ago. He is the highest ranking official in the United States, elected official. Yes, he has. He has been reelected. He's in the U.S. Congress, which House of Representatives, which means every 2 years, he's up for re-election. And believe me, there was some flack tried to be made against him for that.
But he's a San Francisco.
But he does have a pretty solidly supportive district, sort of like Tammy Baldwin being out of the closet as a lesbian and. You know, she's in a pretty solid district here.
We hope.
Can you clarify how the board is chosen?
Oh, each organization chooses their
and then
delegate or voting member. Yeah.
And how are their officers chosen?
The officers, so far, I think have just been sort of self-regenerating. But like I say, they're not voting members of the board.
So how did you get
I got recruited because the previous treasurer had decided to go back to graduate school and get another advanced degree. And at first he said, I can keep doing this job, but then after like a month, I think he remembered how much work being in graduate school was. Maybe he had forgotten in the interim, I don't know. So he said, I can't do it anymore. So one of the board members from the Institute for Humanist Studies, as it turns out, they were discussing it at a board meeting and said, you know, we got to recruit a new treasurer. And he said, well, you know, Ron Solomon's the treasurer of the AEU. Maybe he'd... And they were wooing the AEU at that time anyway, mm-hmm. To become a member. We weren't officially members. So they talked about me and, you know, had a secret vote or whatever. I don't know. and then they called me up and tried to encourage me to take on the treasurership. And And it was not a precondition of the AEU joining or anything like that. It was.
Oh, so you don't have to. So to be an officer, your organization doesn't even have to be a member.
No, although I am a member of the AHA, so I guess.
So it can.
And the Freedom from Religion Foundation. So
you were covered.
That's reasonable. So I'm covered a couple different ways. Yeah.
No, the officers.
I think that's the only two I'm members of. Yeah.
They're all unpaid.
What?
Officers are all unpaid, strictly
unpaid volunteers. Yeah.
Now, how about the staff? Now, who decides on hiring the staff? Is the board members?
The staff sort of evolved, and yeah, the board oversaw it. They started out. I mean, they've only been in existence like 4 years, and the first year their budget was like $50,000 or $60,000. And now it's about $380,000. That's grown that much in that short of time, and most of it is for staff and travel.
Right. Each member organization paid to support this council.
Each member organization. Each member organization pays. They're supposed to pay a minimum of 1% of their annual budget, but. The vast majority of their operating budget does not come from the member organizations. It comes from donations from individuals. And they've been very successful at hiring very competent staff, and they've been very successful at fundraising. They have found lots of people that are willing to support this. They have a category of people called secular angels. These are people that donate $10,000 a year to the organization, and they have a substantial number of them who, I think, all but one or two have renewed every year since
That's
they started
amazing.
Doing
That's
it.
Nice. That's nice.
Bob, does anybody anybody here know if the UU Association has a secular subdivision or component, is the UU a potential donor to this?
They have a lobbyist.
They have
laws.
This is an organization that's dedicated to freeing us from the religious domination in our government and
right.
Unitarians. I haven't heard of anything within UU. Because there certainly is a strong secular army.
I when we lived in Baltimore, I knew at a couple different points in time the chief people that were in the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee office in Washington, but I haven't known anything much about them in the last maybe 10 or a dozen years, and of course now I don't live in Baltimore anymore, so I'm not geographically close. But I knew, you know, some time ago they were very active, and they were, you know, that was clearly a significant part of their mission, was to promote, you know, secularism and to protect it.
The separation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the, what's it called, religious humanists? I think they call themselves that association. It's been a while since I've had file full of information.
You mean that they were the group that was sort of a formal group within the UUs? Or,
no, it's a separate.
Separate. I don't know. I never knew much about them.
Religious humanists, and I think it's an official group.
Okay, but, no, I don't know.
It actually includes, at least a couple of years ago when I did research on it, a Catholic priest. Employed by the Vatican. He's an astronomer. He works in Tucson. The Vatican has an observatory there.
I knew about that.
You know about that?
I think I've heard that they had their own.
Have their own organization. They have supposed to have a meeting every year.
Are there any organizations that the Secular Coalition is currently wooing as potential new members?
I don't think the Secular Coalition, well, I'm not sure. I will say that they are in continuing dialogue with a few groups, and that there may be expansion of membership. According to their bylaws, I think they can only take in 2 new groups a year, so which is kind of interesting. So they're like interested in growing, but not in unmanaged growth or something. I don't know.
And are there 2 new groups out there?
Yes, there are. Well, I know there's some discussions going on right now that might lead to a group coming and applying for membership at the next board meeting. But.
How is the, wasn't there one college group, college university
the
group?
The Secular Student Alliance.
Yes.
Yes.
Have you gotten feedback in terms of how that is developing and growing within the colleges? Is that rather strong?
They have been growing phenomenally from what I hear. And that, that is like one of the most fantastic things I've heard of in a long time is that, mm-hmm. you know, they've started out with just a few chapters on a few campuses, and they've got a lot now, and they've had some really dedicated people working in their office probably for virtually no pay, you know.
I think that's a group that has they have a YouTube video out there, and they all went down to see the Creationist Museum, and it's quite clever how they, you know, and it was quite a large group. Uh-huh. There were like 300 people went. I think Dan Barker was in that group too.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, one of their chief organizer people located in or near Chicago is a high school math teacher, I think, and he's under serious attack right now by the religious mm-hmm. right as being unfit to teach high school students because he's a atheist.
Yeah. Oh boy. You never know what they'll do. Never.
So, yeah, the forces of
more dangerous than a cat
of prejudice are still alive and well in this country, unfortunately.
Teachers are really vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I met a guy who last year who is a naturalist for State Park in Tennessee, or in Tennessee, and he's also a part-time high school teacher somehow or other involved, falls with local high schools. But he's having an awful time. He set up a little display in the visitor center in the park there, because they have lots of fossils in the rocks in the area, and there. So he did a little display on the fossils. And there's a sign there that said fossils are 450 million years old or something like that.
Oops.
And he gets this enormous flak, this enormous pressure.
Oh, give me a break.
Yeah, I could take that sign off. And I think one of the problems he has with his son who's in school, he's just torn all the time. He's not very far from that. He is in, you're talking about, yeah. by the way, that he's about 50 miles or so across the line in Kentucky. So he's right in the center of the worst of the...
Through with the organized.
Well, I am, yeah. I mean,
any other questions before we formally wind up?
Right.
Well, let's thank Ron very much.
Yeah.